This podcast is supported by listeners like you. We're grateful for your tax-deductible donation at newthoughtphilly.org or the link in the episode description.
A practical prayer is a prayer that works.
These discussions between Reverend Bill Marchione and Carol Lawrence dive into the details of how it works and how to work it.
Reverend Bill is a New Thought minister and the author of Practical Prayer for Real Results.
Your new life begins with a new thought.
Carol Lawrence is on a spiritual quest, finding the New Thought teaching after decades on the pulpit in three different traditional denominations.
I've got some questions.
Together, they're exploring the philosophy and activities that come together from many of the world's religions to create the practical spirituality that is New Thought.
Welcome to the Practical Prayer Podcast. I'm Carol, here with Reverend Dr. Bill Marchione. Hi.
Hello there. And so we are recording this episode of the podcast on the day of the solar eclipse. And if you are watching or listening to this podcast in its later renditions, you might vaguely remember that there's a solar eclipse in April of 2024 in North America, or you may not remember that, or you may not care about that. But the reason that we're going to talk about it is because that's kind of the way New Thought works. Things happen and we have an engagement, an interaction, an understanding of them. And what it means to us actually has some meaning.
Mm, yeah. So the eclipse, I remember when I was real little. I don't know, like really, really in elementary school, I think we had one like this.
Mm-hmm.
And we weren't supposed to look at the sun, and they were creating all kind of little things for you to use to look at the sun. And it was, I don't remember, with cones and all kind of stuff, you know. And
thing made out of a couple of cardboard boxes that you put your head into.
Yeah, this stuff. And I remember being so confused by trying to get it done and the threat of going blind if you don't. If you don't get it right, I remember thinking, like, listen, this is not worth it because I don't have, you know, good eyesight to begin with. I'm nearsighted. So I thought, I don't see good on the best day. I'm not messing with this. I remember being a little kid thinking that. And so now today, I'm thinking, I never saw an eclipse except for a picture, and that's all it will ever be. Depends on how you look at these, you know, the extent that you'll go to be able to see it.
That's actually a wonderful metaphor for the way that we engage in the world, because it is possible for somebody's eyesight to be damaged by a solar eclipse. And then there's the voodoo that surrounds that, which is like, oh, if I go outside during a solar eclipse, my vision is going to be damaged. So I should stay indoors. I should hide from it. I should watch it on television. I should make sure that I'm nowhere near the solar eclipse light because there's something evil or malevolent about it. And that's not true.
You know what? I didn't know this, but I was reading about it, and it was like a lot of witchcraft, the negative kind of witchcraft, not the good stuff, but the negative kind was all wrapped up in it. And I thought, you know, I can't say whether it's right or wrong because people believe whatever they want. But things, you kind of make it be what you want it to be, it seems. You know, like,
yep.
You notice how slow I was about saying that because.
Yeah. I remember the same solar eclipse you're talking about when I was a kid. And it was undoubtedly the same one because you were in Philadelphia and I was in North Jersey. And so that's the similar one that's happening. And we built the same contraption in our house so that we could look through the projected image. And it was interesting because you had to make sure that your head wasn't in the way of the picture of the sun. And the mailman came by during the eclipse and my dad met him outside and says, "You're not looking at the eclipse, are you?" And the mailman said, "No, that's the reason I'm wearing glasses is because I did that when I was a kid." So this has been going on for a while.
Long time,
Yeah, and I'm going to take off the religious science hat and put on the science hat. And here's why. Here's how the solar eclipse can hurt somebody's eyes. So when the eclipse happens, it's basically the shadow of the moon. coming. That's what makes it dark. So the moon is coming between the sun and the earth. Now, normally, we don't look at the sun, and we certainly don't stare at the sun because it is what?
Too bright.
That's right. It's too bright to look at. It will hurt our eyes, and it actually hurts to try and look at it, so we don't. But during a solar eclipse, it's fascinating. So we are intrigued by that, and we want to see what's going on. So we tend to look at the sun and say, oh, what is that? And then it turns out that the amount of light that's coming off the sun is much less than it usually is. So it is possible to look at it. So our usual squint, look away reaction goes away. But not all of the sunlight gets blocked. There's usually that little diamond ring thing that's there. That's as bright as the sun ever is. And the way that our eyes work is the sun, the light comes down and it gets focused by our cornea, which is the lens, and it lands somewhere on our retina. And during an eclipse, most of our retina is not getting any light, but that one little tiny part that is, it's still looking straight at the sun. So yeah. That's actually why it's bad to look straight at the sun during an eclipse or any time. It's just nobody thinks of doing it other times.
That just makes so perfect sense. You know, now, as often as I remember the eclipse story and the experience, nobody ever explained it. I don't remember anybody explaining it like that. It's just you don't look at it.
And I kind of think it's scary, bad voodoo.
Yeah, the voodoo part. And I mean, you know, you don't know science, but common sense tells you there's still a little sunlight coming through. Maybe you shouldn't mess with it and just leave it alone. But without a really good scientific explanation, you can just go all over the place with this and anything else, really. Mm-hmm. And I'm not, no poo-poo on interpretations and all of that business. But I do kind of like the scientific explanation for a lot of things. I kind of feel, you know, comfortable with that. Although from the side of the street I come from, yeah, you don't have science and religion at the same table trying to talk. But it
makes sense
to me.
Well, you have them both working together and they're just fine until there's a disagreement.
Well,
in which case,
yeah,
it becomes blasphemy.
But the conversation doesn't get very far before you get a disagreement. I don't know who you've been talking to, but I'll tell
remember
you.
The good
I
old days when the earth was flat and then when it was round, it was the center of the universe. Ah, the good old days. Why can't we have those again?
I don't remember when they call them flat earthers now. That I don't know if that's a new term, but I remember when they talked about it and I thought, could people have really believed that? Because it just doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. But
there's still people who believe that.
Well, that's the shocker, you know, because I'm thinking that doesn't make any sense. But then I realized or was told later in reading that there are people who believe that. And I suppose they can explain it their side as well as others, you know, can explain it. I don't know.
You could take them, the non-believers, up to the International Space Station and have them orbit the Earth in 90 minutes, and they still wouldn't believe it. And it has nothing to do with observation. It has nothing to do with the facts. It has to do with belief. Belief is really strong. Belief is really powerful.
Yeah.
I heard a great explanation of how it's impossible if the Earth is flat. And that is because the Earth is inhabited with cats. And if the Earth were actually flat, by now the cats would have pushed everything off the edge.
Okay.
You know, and that's as likely as anything else.
You know what? Everybody knows I hang out at the ocean every chance I get. And my husband was just saying one time, you know, he said, you know, we live on the edge of the earth. And it was just funny to hear him say that because he is a scientist. Like, that's his background and all of that. And I looked at him and I understood what he was saying. From where we're standing, you certainly can feel like you're on the edge of the earth. And you couple that with talking to God at the same time from being on the edge of the earth. Hey, you can start a whole new religion on that if you want to. So it depends on what you believe, really.
And that's probably the sort of religion that would be relatively easy to get people into because it all happens at the beach. Mm-hmm. The edge of the earth that your husband is talking about. Yeah, well, I mean, that's the edge of the ocean, the edge of the earth. That's where the two of them meet. And there's a little dance they do back and forth that we call waves and tides. But it's always pretty much at the same place. And so, yeah, I love his explanation. Spent a fair amount of time as a scuba diver. And so the edge of the earth stretches out a little bit farther for scuba divers than it does for everybody else, because we can go underneath the ocean part and there's still interesting stuff to do there.
Can you, your imagination can just completely run crazy. For example, did you feel the earthquake the other day that we had?
My daughter gets angry when people ask that question. It was an earthquake. What do you mean, did you feel it? And the fact of the matter is, I did not feel it. I was in the basement grooming the dog with like the vibrating clipper in my hand, and the washing machine was going thugga 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 thugga, making everything shake anyway. And there was a dehumidifier going, so everything was kind of in motion anyway. And my wife runs downstairs, everything is shaking. And I said, what do you mean? She said, come up here, everything's shaking. The glasses are making this tinkling noise. So I get enough stuff taken care of that the dog is not going to freak out and jump off the grooming table. And I walk upstairs, and of course it's over. And so I didn't feel a thing. So, no, I didn't. And it's the second one that I was in that I didn't feel. I was in an elevator the previous time, and it just felt like a bumpy elevator ride. And it turns out the earthquake happened while we were in the elevator at an IKEA.
Yeah. Well, this one. Okay, so I'm going to give you and everybody a chance to laugh, right? I'm feeling the quake. And I'm dead into my work, and I was recording something, and I felt it, and I thought, that a truck is passing. But then that's what happens when you live in Philly. The trucks pass, the windows vibrate. I thought, You don't live in Philly. What is this? And I thought, well, let me just change positions as though that was going to address the problem. And I kept feeling it, and I just got right back into my work until I noticed the computer screen with vibrate. And I thought, maybe something's going on here. But by the time I figured it out, it was over. Forgot completely about it until maybe an hour or so later. I thought, why don't you go check on Don, see if he's okay. Don's my husband, everybody.
So an hour. Snap into action.
I scooped down there to see how he's doing, just like you. He said he didn't feel anything. He didn't know a thing about it. Nothing. In fact, he didn't ask when. No questions. He just kept doing what he was doing.
Nope. Everybody getting text messages. Did you feel that? And the interesting observation that you had, that you try moving to see if it goes away, and that can work, but you would have had to move to like Toledo, where they didn't feel it. And that's another example of something that happens, and then we have an interaction with what happens, and we can ascribe meaning to the interaction, whether the original thing has something to do with it or not.
Exactly. And you talked about beliefs, and you can almost see how different beliefs start, because I wrote about it, the earthquake, of course, afterwards. And the idea is that it depends on where you were and what you were thinking, because I talked to a lot of people, people checking in and making sure everybody was okay. Some people were laughing. Some people were scared to death, and I'm thinking, I'm not inclined to be scared. And I thought, but I had to speak to each person where they were. So right. It was so different speaking to a person who was afraid as opposed to who was being a jokester about it.
Or your husband who didn't feel it at all.
Yeah, or who didn't know a thing. So it might be not a whole lot of space in between times that I spoke to people. And when I got finished, I thought, it's all about what you believe when something happens. That belief kicks in. And that's your truth. But that's not the truth, And
we're heading into the metaphysics of this now, aren't we?
But how do you not get there? Because
that's what there is. So I think it's great to get there. Let's take a break, and then we will talk about the meaning of a solar eclipse or an earthquake, and then what the meaning means.
Okay.
is Reverend Bill letting you know that the Practical Prayer for Real Results class is now available on demand. That's right, you can take it at your own pace, anytime you want. All of the information is at BeTheLight.com. That's B-The-Light.com. You know where to find that stuff. The class is 5 lessons, broken down into 18 modules, and you can take them at whatever pace is comfortable for you. As you work through the process, it starts out with the theory, goes into the practice, there are experiential activities and exercises, and at the end of the program, you will wind up with an understanding of how practical prayer works, and a practical prayer for yourself that will work to create transformation in your life. And as you know, it works for everything. Take a look at the class online at BeTheLight.com. There's a sample lesson so you can see how the class is going to work for you and then dive in. The great news is it's on sale now. You can register and save $20 off of the regular price. I'm looking forward to seeing you in class.
Welcome back to the Practical Prayer Podcast. I'm Carol, here with Reverend Dr. Bill Marchioni, and we're
talking about earthquakes and solar eclipses and what they mean and what they don't mean, because these things happen. This is the way of the universe. Because we are independent and conscious beings, we are aware of our circumstances. We have a memory, so we know what's happened previously, and we have our intellectual faculties, so we can put the pieces together and kind of project what may be happening in the future. We can get fooled. That is such fertile ground for being surprised by things. So recently, an earthquake, and today we're going to be having a solar eclipse. And it's possible to attach meaning to those that goes well beyond what's actually going on. And I'm remembering the Mark Twain novel, A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. So there's this this guy in 1912, a mechanic, who gets bonked on the head or something, and he winds up back in King Arthur's Court. And they figure that he's a wizard, so they're going to burn him at the stake or whatever. And he happens to remember that the date that they're doing that is the day that there's going to be a solar eclipse. So he uses the knowledge that there's going to be a solar eclipse to tell the court, you better not do anything to me or I'll take the sun away. And they go, you can't do that. And he says, give me 8 minutes. And they wait and it gets dark. And it's like, uh-oh, make the sun come back. And he knows how long the eclipse is going to last. He says, no, you're going to sit here in the dark for a while. You're just going to have to wait. And they did, and they were all kind of panicky because they thought that what was going on is that this wizard was taking the sunlight away. And in fact, it was just somebody who knew something. And he said, okay, behave yourselves and I'll let the sun come back. And of course, the shadow of the moon went past and the light came back. And everybody was completely relieved that the wizard was not using his wizardly power to destroy them. The only wizardly power he had was the knowledge that there was going to be an eclipse that day.
Right.
Okay, so with that in mind, what does an eclipse mean? Well, if you know it's coming and nobody else does, it means that you have a wonderful opportunity to maneuver the circumstances. And if everybody else knows that it's going to be happening and you don't, then there's the possibility of getting surprised or hoodwinked. An earthquake is different. Nobody knows that it's coming. But then you get into why. Oh, it happened because of the evil people who are living there. It happened because of this political party or that political party. It happened because it's this far from Donald Trump's golf course or that far from where they're doing fracking in northeastern Pennsylvania. You can ascribe any reasons that you want to it and use that to bolster your opinion, to make your side righter. And what's actually going on is the tectonic plates in the earth are shifting. For whatever reason, they're shifting. They do and they stop. You know, and the shadow of the moon happens to cross the earth in a particular place and then it passes like all shadows do. And what it means is there was an eclipse. That's it.
Now, okay, see, this is awful. No, it's not. That's why I didn't have such a welcome seat at the table on the other side of the street. You know, because I Listen, I was an only child for like 6 years. So there was nothing for me to do but read. That's just it. And my parents were really, because I mean, listen, back there in those days, you had 3, 6, and 10. 12 mm-hmm. didn't come and, you know, channel. So it was nothing to do but read. And I was never allowed to read comic books. So I read a lot of different stuff that, you know, kids probably didn't read. So it's really difficult for me to have accepted a lot of things that were shoved at me, because there's a logical explanation for things. And mm-hmm. and I'm not poo-pooing the idea that you can put spiritual interpretations and other kinds of interpretations on things, but know that's what you're doing. You know, like right. make an analogy as opposed to a belief. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
We can explain it looking at this natural thing. We can give meaning to it as though it were an example or an analogy of something, as opposed to saying, well, this is the reason it happened because it's near Donald Trump's whatever. You know, because, I mean, if you do that, the earth would never stop shaking, because he's right. not the only person that people don't feel favorably about. So then what's going to happen? You know, I mean, he's just the one that's most popular right now that people hate. But, you know, he's...
And that changes.
Yeah.
And that changes routinely. A friend of mine has actually some expertise in total eclipses. And I think he's been in 5 total eclipses. He's actually arranged to be in the path of totality 5 times previously. Mm. And it's one of those things where if you haven't been in a total eclipse, and I've been in a partial eclipse several times, but I haven't been in a total eclipse. And the people who have been in a total eclipse say it's different. And I can say, well, what makes it different? And they can explain it, and they can use words, and they can describe it. But what they're describing is the feeling that they have when something happens that's out of the ordinary. And as much as I understand that, until I do it, I won't really know what they're talking about until I have that same visceral feeling myself. What makes this different? What's, you know, this is, it's not like it's dark, nighttime dark. It's eerie dark in the middle of the day. And what does this mean? And there, you know, it's a personal experience of some of a global astronomical phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. And that's where, to me, the science gets respect. And maybe that's a safe way to put it. And if from the other side of the street, I'll say, listen, I just respect the science. We don't know everything, but what we do know, we should know and not try to unknow it and, mm-hmm. and explore, you know, explore the next thing. You just can't make things into something. And I respectfully say this, wooey, if it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I tend to be a wooey person too, by the way, but if you can explain it away, you can't, it's no magic. Yeah.
There's a huge amount of concern about global warming and climate change. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether the global warming is man-made or it's not, whether it's something that needs to be resolved by human beings or if it doesn't, if the problems are going to continue and, you know, does it mean this or that or the other thing? And people are taking sides, and a lot of people who are taking sides are the ones who are making a lot of money by messing up the planet, and they want to keep being able to make the money, and they think that the planet will take care of itself. And that's where the disagreements come from. And the interesting part is, and some scientists did this decades ago. The question is, do you believe that mankind is taking more resources out of the Earth's crust than are being replaced?
Mm.
And everybody says yes. So the discussion is about what does that mean? What are the implications? And how long is that going to last? And it's a different conversation. It's because everybody believes that. Everybody believes that. There's a story of when the railroad companies were faced with the automobile. It's like, uh-oh, And some of them wanted to fight the automobile. And oh, there's going to be trucks that are available and eventually the interstate system. And then there's going to be airplanes. And the railroad companies that did really well are the ones that visioned themselves as transportation companies instead of just as railroads. Because when you put yourself into the box, if I'm a railroad company, then I got to fight everything that's not the railroad. If I make buggy whips, then the horseless carriage is a threat to my security. And if I say, I'm going to make steering wheel covers instead, you know, or automotive upholstery, it's an opportunity to diversify, get into something different, and continue sharing the gifts and the talents that we have, but to do it in a different direction. There is sometimes such a hesitation for an energy company to think of itself as an oil and gas company instead of an energy company. I mean, there are other ways to make energy. And by the way, they all still have a lot to do with taking resources out of the planet and using them for something. They're just not burning them. A little more clever to make solar panels or lithium ion batteries.
And, okay, that discussion comes up in a lot of ways. It's AI now. It's the same thing. And, you know, for a hot minute, I got a little, you know, a little angst about the AI thing because, look, I'm a writer. And now you're telling me that, you know, whatever. But then I thought about all of the evolution of humankind and productivity and all of that. Those things happen periodically, you know, there's going to be something new. That just means that we're progressive, we're moving forward. And this that I thought for a second was threatening me is not threatening me at all. It's a tool that will be useful to a lot of other people who need it. And it's like the computer, that was the devil. When it first came. Nothing's going to happen. You know, you're going to go to the devil and it's going to put I won't go into it. But now we can't even imagine life without those little tiny computers called a telephone. So yeah.
The screens that we get to stare at and waste our life on.
Oh, yeah. And so I looked at AI the same way. It's a mark of progression. It's just a movement. And it takes nothing from me. In fact, helps me think a little better sometime, actually, when I stop feeling threatened. So I agree with you. I'm really resonating with you about seeing something from a positive lens. How can I use this? Because everything is God. I look at AI as a gift. Not only has it been here forever, and we just didn't think of it that way. It's just been given stepping forward with a title that's unfamiliar to us. But everything is God. It's a gift that God has given us, an expression of God's intellect. And don't get me started on that. When I thought about that, I said, whoa, this is really good. And that's what made me look at it even more, you know, to see, well, listen, how can I use God in my stuff a little better? Maybe this is a gift to me.
And there's definitely something there. And we're starting to talk about that on Sunday mornings in our celebration. There are a couple of observations that I have about AI. And the first one is the big thing in AI now is the large language models, where they take lots and lots of data and they feed it into these things and let it cross-tabulate everything and figure stuff out based on other things that have happened. And there are two areas that particularly have me concerned. Now, actually, there are three. One of them is that the people who own the intellectual material that's getting consumed by these large language models, like the New York Times, because they have some authoritative stuff to say. And, you know, encyclopedias and dictionaries just get read into these things and used. They say, oh, wait a second. That's copyrighted. And it's not that you can't use it. It's just like we put a lot of effort into making that. So when are we going to get something out of it? When are we going to get a credit for it? And that's been just dismissed up until now. The other thing is because they need a lot of data, there's this idea amongst the AI companies that they can use the data that the AI systems have generated as data to feed into the AI systems. Wait a second, you're going to connect your own output to your own input and just let it run itself down a rabbit hole? And the third one is, and as I keep hearing promos for this on companies that are selling their AI technology to companies, hallucination-free. Now, a hallucination is basically what happens when AI gets an idea and then runs with it. And it's something that never had anything to do with truth, but because there's enough other stuff in its database that it convinces itself that it's a good idea, and then that becomes the output that it has. And oh, by the way, if you're training the AI system on its own output, then the hallucinations are just going to get more and more vivid. So all of that stuff comes together so that I, on the one hand, completely agree with you that AI is just another tool, and it's another way that this is going to unfold. And if we tap the brakes a little bit and say, what are we actually doing here? Then instead of insisting that the solar eclipse is God's punishment for us, and it's the way of being reminded that all of the good can be taken away from us, and instead say, no, it's just a solar eclipse. It's going to pass. We're in a better position.
Well, first of all, you're asking a lot of human beings. Stop.
That's me.
Slow down and think. You're asking a whole lot. And that's a whole nother, podcast. And the reason why I would say it's a whole nother podcast, because it can sound a little bit offensive. And I really am not trying to do that. But things move so quickly and people are demanding things that move quick. We're accustomed to that. We're not accustomed mm-hmm. to slowing down, thinking about the implications of this, that, and the other thing. It will flush itself out, not to say that it's not something to be concerned about, but you are so miles ahead of anybody else being concerned about that. And I'm hearing people talk about the use of it, to me, in a way that lacks integrity. Mm-hmm. And all the rest of that. And I'm thinking, what is wrong with you? Don't you, people don't, they don't think, authenticity doesn't matter. It's how you can use it. You know, this is just a really quick story. I was looking at one of the YouTube things where, everybody wants to teach you how to be a millionaire in about 20 minutes. And this one guy produced 30 books. He's an author of 30 books. And I'm thinking, first of all, you ain't been on the planet long enough to have written 30 books. And, sir, I can see there's no genius here we're talking to. And so people are just, eating this up. And I'm thinking, nobody's thinking. But he's smart enough to know that people don't think. And mm-hmm. they can just, what are you going to do? You just have to wait until it just flushes itself out, because, just a moment's thought would tell you that this person is not producing 30 books. And then if you look at the books, even on camera, they don't look like they've been properly edited. So, yeah.
I spent a fair amount of time in my career doing consulting work. And there's a tongue-in-cheek comment that consultants had, which is, if you're not going to be part of the solution, there's good money to be made by prolonging the problem. Let's take a break.
I'm going to look at that when we get finished.
Let's take a break and we'll do a prayer about solar eclipses, earthquakes, and artificial intelligence.
Learn to put practical prayer to work in your life. The steps are simple to learn and let you begin to get real results to create the life of your dreams immediately. Reverend Bill Marchione's widely acclaimed book, Practical Prayer for Real Results, gives you a clear summary of the new thought principles behind practical prayer and the series of easy-to-understand steps found in the most effective prayers from religions and spiritual practices all over the world and throughout history. Practical prayer is not a replacement for your religion or practice. It's a technique to make the work you do in consciousness even more effective. The book includes 40 prayers on various topics that you can adapt as needed and use as your own. Practical Prayer for Real Results is available in paperback, Kindle, and audiobook on Amazon or at b-the-light.com. That's b-the-light.com.
Welcome back to the Practical Prayer Podcast. I'm Carol, here with Reverend Dr. Bill Marchioni.
I gave you the tongue-in-cheek saying that we had in the consulting business. And it was actually not something that we believed in. It's just one of those things that goes around because sometimes it's a little too close to home. And that was, if you're not going to be part of the solution, there's good money to be made prolonging the problem. And if you look at it, that's so true. That's so true. If I can stand here saying, this is a problem, this is an emergency, this is something that has to be dealt with immediately, then I get a lot of attention. Then I get a lot of attention, and I can turn that attention into whatever the coin of the realm happens to be. If it's Facebook followers or YouTube subscribers or advertising sales or people sitting with me for a session to read their tea leaves or whatever it is, if I can frighten somebody enough to think that they need to snap into action by buying whatever it is that I'm selling, then that's the game. And the important part is that doesn't need to be the game. We can do a different game. When there is a solar eclipse, that means something, but it doesn't mean that we're being punished with darkness in the middle of the day. What it means is the earth and the sun and the moon are moving in such a way that the moon is getting between the earth and the sun, and there's a shadow. And that's what we experience as an eclipse. When an earthquake happens, it's because we are living in the city of the damned, and it's being shaken by the infinite power that creates everything. Or the tectonic plates are slipping, and we feel it as an earthquake. And sometimes there's a lot of destruction, and sometimes there's just big stories, and people saying, did you hear that? Did you feel that? Same thing with artificial intelligence. In and of itself, it's neither good nor bad. However, the stories that we tell about it and the way that we engage with it can be. So the important part in all of this, the big umbrella, the overriding picture, what we can take into prayer, is to invite each of these to be an unfolding of good. Highest and best unfolding with love and ease for everyone who's involved. And it's showing up as artificial intelligence. It's showing up as an experience of a solar eclipse, giving us an opportunity to become more introspective, to learn something either about ourselves or about our world that we didn't know before. To have an earthquake remind us of what's important. And perhaps as a suggestion that when we're building something, to don't just think about having the thing standing there on a nice sunny day. Maybe let's consider what's going to happen if there's a storm. What's going to happen if there's an earthquake? What happens if there's a fill in the blank? So that we are being good stewards of the resources that we have and supporting that experience that we're desiring instead of just assuming that it's going to be there. So let's pray by turning our attention away from the world around us. Have your own little personal eclipse by letting your eyes close or go to a soft focus. And look at that. Suddenly the light goes away. It's still there, but we're not aware of it. But we can be more fully aware of that divine power and presence that is there, that's always there, that's showing up in the bright light, that's showing up in the shadows and the darkness, that's showing up in every activity and every moment. There is only that love. There is only that one infinite power and presence, that one divine substance. But that infinite creative power is sharing and revealing and expressing and unfolding through and as all of its creation. Everything is that one divine presence, that one limitless substance expressed in its own way. That everything includes me and each person who is within the sound of my voice. Each one. An individualized expression of that one infinite love, that divine energy, that infinite intelligence, that limitless love expressed in a unique and wonderful and personal way. And I know that as that creative power continues to share itself, to evolve and unfold itself, it does so in a manner that brings more love, more prosperity, more harmony and balance, more health and vitality, more comfort and love, more sweetness and richness, creativity and goodness into our lives. And the good news is there is nothing that stands in the way of this. The experience of an eclipse crossing our path can be one of fear, or can be one of wonder and insight and invitation. So I choose to be aware of love unfolding, new possibilities in every circumstance. The ones that are obviously good, we allow them to express as good. And the ones that seem so challenging that we would normally immediately and instinctively define as bad or challenging or difficult or wrong or undesirable, there's a gift in there as well. Because when the darkness comes, we get to see the light return. A transformation that is not possible without the darkness. And with this in mind, I know that love is unfolding, that goodness is at hand for each of us in our own way. I'm grateful for the good that's coming about. I'm grateful for the willingness of each one who is listening now to be able to let go of attachment to thinking that we already know how this is going to go, that we already know how this is coming out, to open to something new and wonderful. I'm grateful for that willingness, and I'm grateful for the awareness of the love. And I am grateful to be able to speak this word and release it into that creative law that creates everything. And to know without question, doubt, hesitation, or delay that this good is happening now. And so I let it be. I speak this word and I let it be. And so it is.
Practical Prayer Podcast with Reverend Bill Marchione and Carol Lawrence is a production of BeTheLight.com.
Be-the-light.com.
Where you can find more information about practical prayer for real results.
Our theme is by Music of Wisdom. You can learn about the spiritual community of New Thought Philadelphia with daily guided meditations,
weekly celebrations of spirit,
and Reverend Bill's classes in practical spirituality
at newthoughtphilly.org.
This podcast is supported by listeners like you. We're grateful for your tax-deductible donation at newthoughtphilly.org or the link in the episode description.